This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. We love our technology, well, most of us, and our gadgets. But remember what Thomas Carlyle wrote in 1837. Battles in these ages are transacted by mechanism, with the slightest possible development of human individuality or spontaneity. Men now even die and kill one another in an artificial manner. What does this have to do with the iPad? Use it, but don't hit anybody on the head with it. And remember, it's now sold over 1 million units in the last month. It's Technology Day on Talk of Iowa, and we welcome Jeff Balbance, Iowa State University computer consultant, back to the studio. There's always lots to talk about. We'll look at Apple, the App Store, and antitrust, misuse of the term cyber war, and the e-waste industry. Call us up this hour with your questions or send along an electronic mail message. Talk of Iowa after the news. This is Talk of Iowa for this Thursday. I'm Dennis Reese, and it's Technology Day. We welcome back Jeff Balbance, computer consultant from Iowa State University, who is in our Iowa Public Radio studio in Ames. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
Nice to have you back. We have lots to talk about today. The technology world keeps marching along very, very quickly.
It does.
It certainly does. And let's start with Steve Jobs' essay on Flash. I had no idea that the Apple industry was so antagonistic toward Adobe's Flash products. He issued a statement, and he said, quoting now, "Our motivation is simple. We want to provide the most advanced and innovative platform to our developers, and we want them to stand directly on the shoulders of this platform and create the best apps the world has ever seen." So what's going on with Apple versus Adobe Flash?
Well, for a number of reasons, Flash has fallen out of favor at Apple. Apple has chosen not to put Flash on the iPad and the iPod and the iPhone. This despite the fact that a large amount of the World Wide Web is, well, face it, dependent on Flash. Roughly 75% of the video in the world is in Flash format, in something that requires a Flash player. Lots of applications on various websites, from Facebook to your bank, use Flash as part of the interface. So why does Apple want to get rid of Flash? That's a really good question, and that was the reason for the essay.
Well, he claims that it's sort of insulted Adobe. He said that they used to work together so closely, they were good friends, and now they're sort of friends.
Well, yeah,
sort of.
Very, very early in Apple's relationship, I mean, when they brought out their first laser printer, the original LaserWriter, they went to Adobe for the page description language, PostScript, that drove that device, and it was a good choice because it was a very powerful tool. But since then, the whole PostScript business worked out very well for them, but Flash has been less so, and for a number of reasons. Apple doesn't like Flash. Well, they will. What Jobs' official statement was, well, it's not an open protocol. The software is all proprietary. Yeah, they don't charge you for the player, but they charge you for the tools to create Flash Flash applications and Flash videos. And they don't give you the source code, so you really don't know what's going on inside, what's happening under the hood in Flash. Secondly, it's not very secure. There have been, we've looked at the last 3 to 6 months in malicious software attacks. Many of those are coming through vulnerabilities in Adobe Flash. And some of them are quite serious. Because of that, and the other problem, of course, with Adobe Flash is that Adobe has not been very good at keeping up. They've sat on a number of vulnerabilities that they knew of for, in some cases, months before they released a fix for them. And until fairly recently, the tools for updating Flash, updating the Flash player, were not very obvious and easy to use. They've made some changes in that. The most recent version does check for updates, and some of the browsers are helping that process. Firefox, for example, Mozilla started checking your Flash version at startup to let you know, oh, there's a newer version of Flash available. And in the next version of Google Chrome, Chrome will do the same thing for you. It'll check the versions of the plugins that that are installed as well. So security has been a problem.
Yeah, I was actually kind of shocked at myself. I read this entire essay by Steve Jobs and actually understood most of it.
That's a good indicator. You're probably a good person to be in charge of this show.
I'm not really. So what happens if you go out and plop down $600 for an iPad and you can't get Adobe Flash? Is it going to be a huge deal, a huge disappointment?
Well, it depends on what you want to do. Yeah. As Jobs pointed out in the essay, in many places there are alternatives available. YouTube, for example, has what Apple would like you to use in this case is the HTML5 standard, which is built into Safari. It's built into the browser on the iPad. And HTML5 includes video standards. It includes something called H.264. And that works. And there are places that have alternatives where the video is not just available in Flash, it's available in the alternatives as well. And there it's not a problem. But there are also places that don't. If you're one of those people that loves to play those online games, the iPad's not going to be a really good choice for you because most of those games are written in Flash. So you'll get to that site, it will come back, and it will say, well, you don't have the Flash player installed. Mm-hmm. And because you've got an iPad, you can't have the Flash player installed. There's not a way to do that.
Well, he does say that I'll be able to watch my my YouTube site and watch my Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell videos just fine on YouTube with this thing. Actually,
true.
Didn't say that, but he did say YouTube would work fine on it.
YouTube will work. There's an alternate player for YouTube. It will identify that, and you can use that. But there are other sites that don't.
Okay. 866-780-9100 is our toll-free number to call. Talk of Iowa. Speak with Jeff Ballvance, computer consultant, Iowa State University, or send an electronic mail message to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. 1-866-780-9100. So what do you think the long-term future of Adobe Flash is? Do you think it'll just eventually sort of fade out?
Well, I think it'll continue to be used on the desktops. It's still a standard. Will it fade out? Well, things tend to do that.
Yeah.
Over the last 10 or 15 years, if you look at the web itself since 1995, that's not very long. We've gone from basically text-oriented pages with pictures to very complicated web formats, including things like Flash images. And that's not really that long a time if you think about the evolution of technology. It is undoubtedly the case that something else will come along and replace it.
Let's go to a caller. First call of the hour is Dan, who is from Des Moines. Hello, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning, Jeff and host here. Well, I've been a long-time user on the Mac of Flash technology, and matter of fact, pretty much since it existed in its earlier incarnation, it was called Shockwave, and then they have Flash, and then they diluted again with Air. But I kind of agree with Steve Jobs a lot on why he didn't want to have it on the iPad or iPhone. It's been problematic. A lot of places just either the code that the Flash developers are putting out is buggy, or Flash itself, I just think they could have done a better job. I just don't think they worked that hard at it.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think it's a combination of the two. Some of it is bad code. People who are creating Flash tools don't always do a good job of coding. And some of it is that, like Jobs complained, that they've tried to work with Adobe over the years to make the Flash player more stable, and Adobe hasn't done a good job of it.
And so, yeah, I mean, they sloughed it too much. No, Adobe's did a great job with, or I should say, not a great job. They did a fantastic job with Acrobat, but even the quality control, that's faded. There was a major, this is something that some of the people that listen to the show may have ran across as an unusual problem, especially in people in offices that have broadband, but Adobe had an updater situation on Acrobat where it would try to retry and retry its updater automatically on the internet, and it would just burn through bandwidth so much that some of the major firewall makers actually make a button to stop that from occurring because it would just chew bandwidth up on somebody could have a huge amount of bandwidth, and the next thing you know, they feel like they have nothing because all these Adobe, they just have real quality controls that problems at Adobe in the last few years. Before that, their products were fantastic. I mean, I love Acrobat in its earlier incarnations, but the more recent ones have been troublesome for a lot of people, and even a lot of companies have had real bona fide problems with the technology, so they just haven't. They really need to get their quality act together. Now that James Gosling has left Sun Oracle, maybe they can get a real Uber programmer to get their stuff actually done right, you know. And don't forget to remind people the Twitter you guys have for IPR. I just found that online. That's a great thing. So
yeah, that's right. We do that now on Twitter. So Dan, thanks. Great comments.
Yes, well. Have a good day, and remember, there's only one letter difference between the word bundle and bungle. So.
Okay.
I like that.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one before. Thanks, Dan. Dan called from Des Moines. So anyway, have you heard people having experiencing problems with Acrobat that he mentioned?
Well, we do get reports of things, and we have, of course, on our supported machines, we see people do difficulties. Sometimes you try to print something and it doesn't print right. It doesn't create the PDF correctly. One that we've been fighting with, and I haven't got a resolution yet, is with Acrobat Reader 9, with Adobe Reader 9, you could get into a situation where in Windows it couldn't display a PDF in the browser. Mm. It would display it just fine outside the browser, but inside the browser, depending, it would either give you a blank screen or it would simply hang Internet Explorer. What's the problem? We don't know. People have reported it to Adobe. There's not a resolution yet. It's been a couple of months that I've been working on those kind of a problem. So there are things, and the difficulty is that there really isn't a really good alternative right now to creating PDFs.
Yeah, I was going to say, there really isn't right now.
And that's one of the things, of course, that Jobs complained about. It's a closed technology. It's proprietary. And while there are people who have hacked at the PDF standard, PDF is an open technology. You can create those, but they still don't do some of the things that Acrobat does well. So, if you don't need anything but just creating a thing that looks like a piece of paper, there are alternatives to that. But if you want to do forms and all of the other neat tricks that you can do with Adobe's PDF format, you have to go with Acrobat.
Acrobat needs a safety net. Sorry, that was a bad joke. Anyway, we'll be back in a minute to continue our conversation with Jeff Ballvance, computer consultant at Iowa State. 866-780-9100. Give us a call. Twenty minutes past 10, and talk of Iowa Tech Day continues. I'm Dennis Reese with Jeff Ballvance, and we have some lines open if you'd like to call in with your technology questions. 866-780-9100. Jeff, have you gotten your hands yet on the iPad? Have you actually touched it and played with it yet? Sounds kind of strange, but I'm sorry, but have you had a chance to mess with the iPad?
Yeah, I have seen one from a distance. I have not actually gotten to touch it.
I would love to. I wish somebody would come by with one just so I could sit down with it for a few minutes.
Well, in some respects, some people have called it an iPhone on steroids, and to some extent it is. It's the same kind of applications that the iPhone runs. It's just a larger screen. But with the larger form factor comes other possibilities that you don't normally do with an iPhone, like add a keyboard. It does have a version of the iWork tools that you can use to create presentations and do things. On the other hand, there are some limitations to it. So, for example, I need a font. Somebody gave me the example of he was trying to do a presentation, And his corporation required in presentations that specific fonts be used. Well, there's no way to install that font on his iPad. So doing the presentation in Keynote on the iPad didn't work quite as well as he had hoped.
Even with 3 million applications, you can't find a font that you want?
Not necessarily, no. Okay. I have noticed that corporations do tend to do that. They want to make sure that they use fonts that you can't get for anywhere else.
And it's never going to be a phone, right?
Right.
Right, never,
well,
ever.
Well, not exactly, no.
Okay, and, well, you should never, never say never, I guess. Right. Let's go to Bill, who's been waiting in Des Moines to talk to Jeff Ballvance. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. I've got a question. I've got a ThinkPad that the DVD doesn't work, and I was told that I needed to restore the original, you know, configuration, which I don't know how to do. And then it's in Vista right now, and when I get that restored, I would like to upgrade to Windows 7.
Okay.
So how do you restore one of those gadgets?
Well, with a ThinkPad, there's generally a CD or a DVD that came with it that will restore the device.
The DVD doesn't work.
The DVD doesn't work. So you have
right.
a conundrum. Okay. What you might want to look at doing, you may be able to copy the information on that DVD to, say, a USB key. You might be able to borrow an external DVD drive from someone. ThinkPads, if they're fairly recent, they should be able to boot from a USB device. And external DVD drives or CD-ROM drives are fairly inexpensive. You might be able to borrow them from someone.
Uh-huh. Okay, so there's no way to do it. There's not a built-in capability in the...
There isn't always. I don't think the ThinkPads did. No, some of the Dell machines had what they called the restore partition. And if you booted up and chose the boot options, there's usually a key to do that. Oftentimes it's F12. One of the things in the list might be restore. I'm not sure if that's available on the ThinkPads or not.
But I could try the F12 key.
Yeah, try the whatever key it uses to boot up, to choose a boot device. That's usually listed on the startup screen. When you start it up, you'll see probably the IBM or the Lenovo logo, and there may be a note somewhere, press F2 for setup or press F12 for boot choice or something.
Yeah. Well, it says press blue key for ThinkVantage.
Ah, okay.
Which is a big menu of all kinds of stuff.
There may well be what you're looking for in ThinkManage. They may have a restore partition there.
Actually, I think this is was a software issue because I put in a DVD maker, one of the more popular ones, and then it didn't work after that. So I probably should have stuck with the primitive one that was in there.
You might try uninstalling that. If that is the case, removing it might clear it up. There might be a conflict between the CD or the DVD drivers.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay,
thank
Bill.
You for your help.
Thanks for the call, Bill Cole from Boeing. Let's go next to Cindy, who's in Wellman. Cindy, you're on Talk of Iowa.
Good morning. I was wondering whether we have two machines now that are running Windows 7 as well as one that's running Vista. And in our home wireless network, whenever you start up one of the Windows 7 machines, it shuts down the router over and over again. So if one person's on already and the other person logs on, then the thing shuts down. I was wondering if there's something in Windows 7 that needs to be set or can be changed so that it won't do that.
Wow. I do not know right offhand what that's doing. I'm sorry. Generally, I wouldn't think it would do anything to shut the router down explicitly, unless the long shot might be that there are a couple of viruses of Trojan horses that do try to infect routers. It's possible that that's what's going on, but that's kind of a long shot.
Okay.
Look at doing a scan with your favorite antivirus application.
Yeah, I've done both of the computers, so I don't think that's it.
Perhaps someone can help us with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if anybody has a comment or some advice.
It's just been since we got these two machines, so it's odd.
Okay, thank you,
Cindy. Thanks.
866-780-9100. Let's see if I have this name right. Is it Keon?
Yeah.
From Waterloo. Welcome to Talk of Iowa.
Got a quick question. Whenever new technology comes out, there's always this rush to for people to go buy it. Is it best to wait until the second or third generation comes out, or just go get the new technology?
Well, that's a really good question. It depends a little on how easy it is to upgrade the new technology. In the case, for example, of the iPad, if you bought the first generation iPad, you don't have a 3G wireless because that wasn't available. You don't have whatever will come next. And because it's not horribly upgradable, the only way to get the new stuff will probably be to buy a new one. On the other hand, if you're talking about software, oftentimes the software will be upgradable. You'll be able to download updates and patches from the manufacturer. That might not be quite as bad an issue. We did always used to have the joke that Microsoft's products, the best thing to do is wait for the third version. So wait for it. You know, there are many people and many corporations who wait for the first service pack to be released before buying a piece of software, for example. It kind of depends on your attitude about having the latest and greatest stuff. If you have to have the latest and greatest, then you're going to buy it quickly. Otherwise, I'd recommend, you know, wait a couple of months and see what kind of bugs fall out.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot. I'd wait till about 2015. I'm sure it'll be better by then.
It will be different.
It'll be different, right. Let's go to Jim, who is calling from Amana. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Just fine. Hey, you had a call from a person that was having problems with the router shutting down.
Yes.
And, yeah, that is probably the settings in the router. I've noticed that on mine where they have a number of devices that can connect at the same time. It's kind of a security setup, and that might be something she could look at.
Oh, so you like you're saying, you can limit it and say, I only connect to two machines at a time.
Right,
and
exactly.
So connecting the third one will drop one of them. That would be worth looking at.
Yeah, I've had that happen at home where I've had six computers going at once and one would drop out. So.
Mm-hmm. That would be worth looking at, and that's going to be a dig into the manual and probably probably you talk to the router through a web interface as a general rule. So and that'll depend on the model of the router, and you'll have to take a look at the manual to figure that out.
Yep, there you go.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate that call. Let's try to get in one more call before the break. Let's see if I have this name right. Is it Adarsh?
Yes.
All right. You are from Des Moines, and you are on Talk of Iowa.
All right. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome. Just a quick question here.
Yes, I have a very quick question. You know, my question is that is it legal to download video from the YouTube on a like Real Player or any other player, and then burn your personal DVD from that download and then play that DVD on your normal DVD player?
That depends on the license of the particular video.
I
would say it's questionable, but it's I think I would fall under it could fall under fair use. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on the internet, unfortunately.
But it is possible to download and burn your personal DVD from that download. Is it?
It is possible to do that. Yes.
Oh. And my second question.
Well, can you hold on to Darsh? If you want to hold on, we'll get back to your second question following the break. We'll take a break for the Environment Report. Be back in a few minutes. 866-780-9100. Jeff Ball Vance, Talk of Iowa continues in a few minutes. Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese with Jeff Ballvance, our computer consultant from Iowa State University and our Iowa Public Radio studio in Ames on Technology Day on Talk of Iowa. We have Adarsh, who has had a second question. He's calling from Des Moines. I hope he's still there.
Right, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. This is a second quick question for Jeff. I have about 300 audio tapes of music, and I want to convert them to CDs, and I want to know if you are aware of any device like a tape deck which can be hooked to the computer so that I can burn CDs from those tapes, audio tapes.
Well, any any audio player can be connected to a computer that has a sound card or is equipped with a microphone input or line in input. Most modern computers come with sound in, and all it's required to connect a suitable stereo player to it is an appropriate set of cables. Most of the stereo places or the audio places that do things like that would be able to, you know, hook you up with that. Beyond that, there are plenty of programs for the recording of audio. I use one called Audacity.
Right, but how to put the tape in the, insert the audio tape into the computer? There has to be a little slot and deck for that, isn't it?
What you would do is connect a cassette deck to the computer.
Oh, through the auxiliary?
Through the audio input.
Okay.
And that's the easiest way to do it, and it works quite well.
And then we have to insert the sound card also, you said?
If you need a sound card, if you don't have an audio input, then you would need a sound card.
Oh,
as I say, most modern machines come with sound input nowadays.
Okay. Thank you very much for these two questions.
You're welcome.
Adarsh calling from Des Moines. He called 866-780-9100. My IT person here, Jeff, gave me a program just the other day that allows you to save YouTube videos on your computer. I don't know whether it's legal or not.
I was looking at that during the break, and there are a couple of cases. As general rule, YouTube doesn't support downloading video. Mm-hmm. The idea is that you're supposed to play YouTube videos within the YouTube player on your internet browser. There are a couple of cases where you can, where that's permitted, and also there's a new YouTube partner program that allows then. If it's permitted, there'll be a button that says download your own videos to MP4. There's a limit on that. You can only do two a day.
Okay.
And then there's also the click to buy button that shows up in certain videos where you can either – the click to buy button, if that appears, you can find out how much it is. Some of them are free. Some of them cost money. And that's handled through Google Checkout. Big surprise.
Not that my IT person would give me an illegal – programming. No, he would.
Well, no.
No,
I wouldn't think so.
No. Let's go next to Ralph, who's calling from Indianola. Hi, Ralph.
Yes, good morning. Thank you very much, folks, for Talk of Iowa and to Jeff for his expertise this morning.
You're welcome.
I make a lot of PDFs. I'm retired, but because of my hobbies, I'm either scanning stuff to PDF or I am converting doc files to PDF.
Okay.
Successfully. I've used for some time a program called OmniPage to do that. But a couple of days ago, I ran into a DJVU file for the first time, and I Googled DJVU to find out what it's all about, and it seems clear that it's a PDF competitor, claims to create smaller files with better resolution, and I downloaded a viewer, and that worked fine, and I see that I can get a DJVU creating environment in a Windows environment for very little money. And the question is, I'm sure that's all going to work, but the question is there any future to this, considering the fact that all of the folks that I bombard with these PDF documents in the past are all going to have to equip themselves with DJVU software?
That's a really good question. Microsoft tried the same thing in the most recent version of Office 2007. They had a thing called the tool to create XPS files. Well, I don't know anybody that uses XPS files. They're similar, but they require a different player, a different viewer, and they really haven't caught on. Will somebody else's alternative catch on? That's a good question. It's a long shot. The big advantage of PDF is that it's available for virtually everything. You can get Adobe Reader for Windows. You know, Mac OS X has it built in. There are PDF readers for Linux and Palm OS and Windows Mobile, and it's ubiquitous. It's pretty much everywhere. So once you've attained something like that, it's hard to knock them off their pedestal. I guess if there are significant advantages to the alternative format, then it may catch on.
Do you have any experience with this? Is there something to their claim of better resolution and smaller files?
I do not have any experience with it.
Well, except for this file, I don't either. I would have to bring it by the creation software and bring it up and scan the same files and create PDFs and create DJVU files to find out, I guess.
Yeah. What I would probably do, recommend that you try, is to go out and look for reviews of that software. Just give the name of the software and follow it with the word reviews on Google. And if someone else has tested it, then they may be able to give you some good information.
Well, I suspect that it will work. You know, I assume that it would work. It's only a question of whether this is going to, for the reasons you just explained, mm-hmm. as to whether it's not it's going to enjoy any popularity compared to the ubiquitous availability of PDF, mm-hmm. free PDF viewing software.
Yeah, that's the big problem.
All right, thanks, Ralph. We have lots of calls to get to. Appreciate that call from Indianola. I want to go to actually an email first from Mark. He says, I purchased two identical Dell laptops 3 years ago. A month ago, laptop one's battery lasted 1 hour and 15 minutes. Laptop two lasted 15 minutes. I switched the batteries, and now they both last 15 minutes. Laptop two being used by my college son. Is this a hardware problem or a user problem?
It could be both.
Could be both. Okay.
More than likely, it's a problem in the battery hardware itself. If the lifetime moves with the battery, then it's pretty obvious that the battery is a problem, and that's not an uncommon problem with batteries. Battery lifetime does decrease with age, and so on the other hand, you can affect battery lifetime by what you're doing. Things that require more memory, more processor, more hard drive, especially things that are producing audio, heavy use of wireless, all of those things add up to more battery usage than you might have with someone who's doing different things.
Okay. Next is Ellen, who is calling from Fairfield. Good morning, Ellen.
Hi, good morning. A few months ago, I have a Dell desktop with Windows Vista on it. I started getting error messages when I tried to install software, and I do it a lot. And the error message was usually 2203, which my research shows has to do with permissions. And what's happened is that it's gotten to the point where I have to go into my administrator account to install software, and I haven't, and occasionally software doesn't even work on my user account, but usually it does. I just need to go into this administrator account and install it, which is very annoying. I was just wondering if you know what I need to do to get back access to my own computer.
Well, in the user accounts control panel, check and see if you are set as an administrator.
I am.
Okay. Then what you want to do is look into the UAC, the user access control. Basically, you can specify in Windows Vista and in 7 what individual users can do. And the whole idea of dividing up users and making permissions changes has to do with security. And it's something that may have changed as a result of security updates that have been done to Vista by Microsoft.
Okay. Would I go into the security center to do that?
You could look. Basically, I think it would probably be, it may be in the security center, it may be elsewhere. What I would probably do is go into help and describe the problem a little more to the help system and let it give you some guesses.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thank you for calling, Ellen. Ellen called 866-780-9100. Maybe one line is open. A busy day, lots of callers. This is Talk of Iowa. Jeff Balvance is a computer consultant at Iowa State University. Email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next is Joanne, who's calling from Des Moines. Hi, Joanne. Are you there? Joanne. Guess not. Let's try Bianca. And I hope I have that name right. Is it Bianca?
Bianca, yes.
From Emerson, Iowa, and you were on the program.
Yes, we have a Dell computer that is not hooked up to the Internet.
Okay.
We use it for our farm business, and recently we purchased an HP printer so that we could print checks. We went through the CD and did the test papers, everything printed off. We printed off a document from the computer, but when we went to do checks, it would not print a check. We use the Quicken program. We just wondered if there was something you knew of that we needed to try to get the checks to print.
To get the checks to print? What happens when you try to print a check? Does it
it deletes the check off the Quicken and says there's nothing to print.
Well, that's the kind of thing that I would probably take up with Quicken's manufacturer. It sounds almost as though, well, I'm not sure what to describe. It's something that I would have to research if I was trying to solve it for a client. But looking at that, it sounds as though there's something in Quicken that needs an update, perhaps, to work with that new printer driver. I don't know. I would check with Quicken first.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Bianca, for the call. Lots of calls. Just quickly, you sent me an article, really interesting, Jeff, about Facebook security problems. I was shocked to read it. I thought that as huge as Facebook is, they would be better at preventing some of this intrusion by commercial companies who can track users' use of the program, and other people can figure out what websites or friends have been checking out. What's going on here?
Well, the whole idea of social networking, which is what Facebook is to share information with your friends. And Facebook has been under a lot of scrutiny lately because their privacy system really doesn't work very well. For example, many of the things that you're describing, and even fairly large websites like CNN, The Washington Post, places like that, can actually install applications in your profile without even knowing it. So you can have things that suddenly begin posting information to your wall, and you don't realize that it's been done, all because you just visited that particular site.
Is Facebook doing anything about this?
Well, Facebook is gives you the tools to remove it, whether or not they will make changes. If enough people complain about it, if the press is bad, Facebook is pretty good about going in and redesigning things. I mean, recently they completely redesigned the interface because of complaints about privacy. But you do need to go into your settings. What they recommend in the article was to go into your settings in Facebook and look at the applications that are being installed. And do you want them to be able to post on your wall? I did that after the article. I found out, well, AOL can post on my wall. That's interesting. I didn't really want that to happen. So, even the best of us get caught.
Yeah, so you can actually go and find out if one of your best friends has been shopping at Macy's.com or something.
That's right. Yeah. Many of those will let you do that. Yeah. And that's the whole idea is sharing information. But do you want information shared that much?
Right. Okay, back to the phones. Jason is calling from Muscatine. Hi, Jason.
Yeah, just a quick comment. I actually came in when you guys were talking about PDFs and whatnot. Something that I found in practice, I use Linux a lot, formats like PDF, .doc, the proper format, the specification is out there. Sheep, it says, for those who aren't more technical, if you want to be a .pdf, you must follow these rules.
Right.
Problem that I've noted and could be important for folks using things like Google Docs and then trying to output a .doc to mail to their potential employers is Microsoft stuff especially has done this, Adobe a little bit. A .doc file that you create in OpenOffice or in Google Docs and then open up in Word might not look exactly like it would if you had created it in Word originally.
Right.
And just something I wanted to warn folks about, make sure they're aware of it. It is supposed to look different. If it's really important, create it in Word, go to your library and use that, mail it to yourself.
Yeah. It's always a good idea to look and see what it looks like in the final destination, even if you have it available.
Exactly. Do that before you mail it, and it'll save you a lot of embarrassment and maybe get your job.
Yep, that's very true. And in fact, one of the recent updates to Office, and it's kind of funny, Office and OpenOffice both, had cases where they weren't following the published standard, and so they had to fix the program so that they actually generated documents that looked the way they were supposed to.
Now let's go next to East Moline. Chris is calling it. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
And you're on the air.
Yes, thank you.
Do you have a question?
I have a Windows Vista. It's a 64-bit system.
Okay.
Flash player doesn't. The new Flash player doesn't work so well on it. And I've tried to, when I tried to update it, There's a message in there that tells me if you have the 64-bit does not work with the 32, with the new flash player, okay. And they're updated. They need to update it.
Okay. Well, that brings a case that when you are running Windows 64, Windows XP 64 or Vista 64 or 7-64, 64-bit version, you really want to be sure and install the 64-bit versions of the applications, if at all possible. And so if you installed the 32-bit version, it may work, but it may work badly. The thing to do would be to go back and uninstall that version of the application and install the right one. Now, you're running into the case where, well, we've got the 32-bit version updated, but not the 64-bit. That's one of the things that Jobs was complaining about, that they don't always get things updated as fast as we'd like to see. So I would roll back, I'd uninstall Adobe Reader, I'd install the most recent 64-bit version available, and then keep waiting for that update to come out.
So it's just a matter of time and wait for them to fix it for it.
Unfortunately, yeah. Yes, that's true.
That's kind of what I keep hearing, so. Okay, well, I appreciate you taking the call.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot. Jim is next in our queue here from Johnston. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. I'm just going to pull over here. I don't think this is a serious problem, but I'm kind of it bugs me why it did this. When I start my computer, it used to show a Compaq logo. It's a Compaq computer.
Okay.
And then Windows would start, but a couple weeks ago, it started showing a Hewlett-Packard logo. And I know Hewlett-Packard makes Compaq. Is that true?
That is correct. Hewlett-Packard bought Compaq some time ago.
So did the BIOS get changed? Is that logo that first appears when you turn on your computer, is that in the BIOS?
That's right. The flash, what we call the flash screen, that's embedded in the BIOS. And if you did a BIOS upgrade or if the software did a BIOS upgrade for you, then that splash screen would have been updated.
Okay. Well, I didn't do it. Can the computer do that automatically?
It's possible that that particular piece has been scheduled automatic updates, sure.
Is there any way I can find a record of that being done on my computer?
Well, if you go into the event viewer in Computer Manager, you may be able to see it. It's kind of a long shot. It may be logged there, and it may not. Yeah, look in Windows Help for the event viewer.
Okay.
It's one of the administrative control panels.
I just want to make sure I don't have a virus.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that's the kind of thing that sounds not like a normal activity.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jim. Here's an email from Nicholas in Cedar Rapids. He says, I've been noticing a high quantity of ads with loud noises or music lately while using the internet. These don't seem to be similar to lots of internet ads, but they're more invasive and make viewing some pages impossible. They play music and are visual, and there's no way other than closing the page to make them go away. Can I control the sound of ads somehow without turning off my computer speakers? I'm all for advertising, but not when it ruins my internet pages. That happened to me yesterday. I was just doing some little innocent search, and I got this loud video for an ad asking if I wanted to know what my baby would look like. I thought, have you run into that one before? Very strange.
I've not run into that one. No.
Well, you're supposed to, you know, send in a picture of yourself. And anyway, but it was really sort of troubling and disturbing, I guess, just to have this loud sound blasting way at you from nowhere.
Yeah. Well, there's one easy way to fix that. You can switch to an iPad because that's a common example of a flash ad, and it's one of the things I guess Steve must be upset about. if you're using Firefox, there's a nice tool called AdBlock that you can use to prohibit those things from doing. I use a more rigorous one called NoScript, which blocks everything unless I explicitly permit it. That's a little trickier. I'm not sure I'd recommend it for everybody, but that's one way to do it.
Nicholas says
to block that off.
He says he's using XP. He has a Dell netbook and currently a Surf with Chrome.
Okay, Chrome should have an add-on to do that too. I'm not sure if there's a way to block Flash. I haven't dug into Chrome enough, but Certainly, Chrome ought to be able to manage those, or there's undoubtedly an add-on for it.
Well, we just have a minute left, not time enough for another call, another article about the e-waste industry loves the iPad. The iPad may be a green machine, but it's going to have a number of not-so-green impacts. Precious and rare metals, build the gadgets, and so forth. What is the e-waste industry, Jeff?
Well, when you discard electronic equipment, it has to go somewhere. And preferably, it doesn't go into landfill. There are companies who recycle the materials in electronic components. And it's been a big industry because, well, we change things out so often. The lifetime of a desktop machine is 3 to 5 years. We throw things away like it's going out of style, and a lot of them have gold and other precious metals in them. They have components that can be recycled. If not, they wind up in a landfill and pollute. So it's a good thing and it's a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, we have a long way to go in this
area. We do.
Yeah. Out of time. Thanks so very much, Jeff Ballvance. A lot of questions answered this hour. A lot of interesting information. Really appreciate it.
Glad I could be here.
Jeff Ballvance is a computer consultant at Iowa State University, and he was in our Iowa Public Radio studio in Ames. That's Talk of Iowa for today. We had help from our student assistant, Christoph Mai. Iowa Public Radio production of Talk of Iowa, a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Our theme music written and performed and produced by Dan Knight. Talk of Iowa back tomorrow at 10 here on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese. Thanks for listening. Thank you.